94.5 ESPN Homer. The Hall of Famer is on assignment. I am talking with Jim Boylan. You know him first as scored 14 points in the NCAA championship game when Marquette beat North Carolina. Is that how I should start for all the Marquette and Wisconsin fans statewide about you?
I think that that is the perfect way to lead in to this interview. Love it. Love it.
What do you remember about any of the 14 points, or what is the first thing that comes to mind? Because that's forever. As I say, you have a ring forever.
Yeah. So I remember the first shot I took came off a screen, caught it. I don't even think I took a dribble. I think I just came off the screen, rose up, and it just felt good, you know. And so in those high-pressure moments like that, obviously you're playing for a national championship. There's pressure. There's expectations. There's a whole bunch of stuff. And when that first shot went in, it just let me relax. And then after that, every time I had the ball, I just felt confident. And so I remember that very first shot, that little elbow jump shot that was all net and just gave me the confidence I needed for the rest of the game.
How confident were you? How confident was the team going into the game against North Carolina?
You know, we had a funny year because we were a highly ranked preseason. Got off to a pretty good start. I think we might have been 11-1 or 10-1 or something like that. And then Al announces his retirement at around the holiday season, around Christmas. And then we had a funky January and February, and barely got into the tournament. We had five road games at the end of the season, which was kind of odd, and we had to win all of them. We won four, and then at halftime of the fifth game, which was against Michigan, and who at the time was number one in the country, the bids came out and we got in. So we ended up losing that game in a heartbreaker, but we kind of found our mojo towards the end of the season, playing on the road and winning those games. And then you kind of felt like, okay, let's get into the tournament, see what happens. We play Cincinnati, I believe, in the first round, and we were down at halftime. We come back, we win. And then you start believing that, you know, something really, really unique and really good could happen for Al McGuire right now. A Hollywood script, that kind of an ending. And we started to believe that. And we ended up beating Kansas State in a comeback in the last couple minutes of the game. And then by the time we got to the Final Four, we had dodged a couple of bullets. And we really believed, like, you know, sometimes, this is me personally, I believe, sometimes the game gives something back to you. And I believe that Al gave a lot to the game of basketball, the game of college basketball, and I felt like the game of college basketball was giving something back to Al. So we felt really confident when we got to the Final Four.
Talking with Jim Boylan, you're a much better teammate or player than I was, because I can tell you what I've been thinking. When he announces in whatever it was that he's leaving, I'm going, what is wrong with the man? I mean, I know he's crazy. Who announces it in the middle of the season? I mean, what? You wait till the year is over. You let us have the year. Are those any honest thoughts that people had or you had at the time? If I'd been on that team, I'd have been mad. But maybe you weren't.
Well, you know, it was my first year with the team because I had transferred from a little school called Assumption College. And it was my first year playing. I had a redshirt year, so I sat out the year before when they had Earl Tatum and Lloyd Walton and had a really, really good team. But unfortunately, Indiana went undefeated that year. And so it was just kind of a whirlwind, actually. You know, I remember getting the call to come down to a luncheon that something's going on and making the announcement. It was crazy. You know, it was really, it created a big distraction for us. And you know, we had a hard time dealing with it, actually. And like I said, we had a funky January and February. I think we lost our last three home games, including Bo's senior night and Al's last home game. Whoa. We lost those games. So, you know, it was a tough thing. It was a tough thing to handle. But like I said, we kind of got our balance back a little bit by playing those last five games on the road and winning four out of five and taking that momentum into the tournament.
All right, talking with Jim Boylan. I may have said this once before, but when I first learned about the team and I looked at you and they said, he's from Assumption College in Worcester, Mass. I go, there's no way. They go, what do you mean, no way? My uncle, Mike True, was a professor of English at that little dinky school. And the only reason I knew anything about it was because no one knew how to pronounce Worcester except him.
Yeah.
And I said, there's no way. You got to check. There's no way Jim Boylan played at that school and went from there to Marquette. Now, maybe Assumption College was better than I thought. I have to give him credit. I know my uncle didn't even know you had a basketball team, so I'm sure you never had him in class. Dr. Mike True. All right. You wouldn't remember anyway. That's like 100 years away. But so I know you were an outstanding high school player. This is just for me. How was Assumption College ever a part of your basketball career?
It's kind of a little bit of a long story, but I'll try to give you the quick version. I have an older brother. His name is Michael. And Michael went to Assumption College. And Michael is exactly 4 years older than me. So when I was a freshman in high school, he was a freshman in college. And so I used to go up on the weekends to visit my brother from New Jersey. I would drive up with his girlfriend, at the time, who is now his wife of some 50 years or so. And so I would go up and spend time at Assumption. And I got to know the coach really well. I went to a lot of summer basketball camps over my high school years with that coach. His name was Joe O'Brien. He ended up being the executive director of the Basketball Hall of Fame for about 25 years. Was a fabulous coach. And right around the time I was deciding where to go, and I had visited Kentucky and Virginia and all the, you know, the big name schools, Notre Dame and everybody, my mom got really sick on her deathbed, and she survived. She was fine, but it was a tough time, and I was kind of on my own and didn't know what to do, didn't know where to go. And I leaned on Joe O'Brien, and so I said, you know what, I love Assumption, I love the people up there, I love the coach, I love the program, powerhouse Division II program, top.
Wow.
Top,
I want to apologize to my five. Uncle.
Yeah.
He's no longer alive, but I never gave them any credit for being. So I'm glad you set me straight. Well, that's an incredible story, and explains how you ended up going to Marquette, because it had not been for your mom, you would have probably never been at Marquette. You would have been somewhere else just as big.
And the crazy thing is, I went to Joe O'Brien after 2 years, and I said, Coach, I want to transfer. He goes, all right, where do you want to go? I said, I want to go to North Carolina. And he said, okay, I'll call Dean Smith. He called Dean Smith. He said, you know what, in the meantime, let's put together a list of some schools. He said, and I want you to include Marquette, because I know that Coach McGuire really likes to take transfers, or he's open to it. And so Dean was interested. We had a conversation, and eventually he said, you know, Jim, I tell my guys I don't take transfers, so I just can't break that rule. He said, but, you know, there's another guy I know who loves transfers, and that's Coach McGuire. So I had two coaches tell me I should go look at Marquette, and so I did, and boom, there you go. And I ended up at Marquette, and the irony of it is pretty obvious that we played North Carolina in the NCAA tournament. So I figured my destiny was to be in that game some way, somehow, whether I was on North Carolina's team or if I was playing for Marquette. So.
And so I would assume at some point in that tournament, you're going like, it's going to be North Carolina. I know it's going to be North Carolina.
Yeah.
And?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing, I'll tell you a funny story. Years later, 1988, I think it was, I was with Al. We were at the Final Four in Kansas. In Kansas City, and we were walking through the tunnel to come out to the court, and it was just Al and I walking, and there was a single individual walking in the opposite direction coming towards us, And who is it but Dean Smith? So we stop. Al says hello. I say hello. And Dean Smith says to me, you know, that game you played that night in Atlanta was the greatest game you ever played in your entire life. And I looked him dead in the eye and I said, Coach, I thought that's when you were supposed to play the best game of your life. And Al and I just turned and walked away. It was a cordial, it wasn't a nasty conversation. It was a cordial conversation. As we walked away, Al just kind of elbowed me in the ribs and goes, nice one.
That is fantastic.
That was a great.
All right, so that's Jim Boylan on the national championship team. And now we're going to break, and then part two will be Jim Boylan, who I think you're like the Forrest Gump of basketball. I think anybody of any significance in the history of basketball, you have a connection. I'll explain next.
Peace out. A-Town.
94.5 ESPN, round two with Jim Boylan. All right, yeah, he's a big shot, and he was on the national championship team. But that's where it begins. It doesn't end. So let me see first. You're at Michigan State as a coach for Judd Heathcote. It's got Skiles on the team there. Let's start at Michigan State.
Well, when I got to Michigan State, Scott had just graduated, but Tom Izzo was an assistant. Tom and I were assistant coaches together, Tom Izzo. And Tom Crane, who eventually would become an assistant at Michigan State a couple of years later, he's kind of hanging around the program because he's working at, I can't remember what school he worked at, Division III school, maybe Alma or something like that. So I started there. That was my beginning of my coaching career. I coached in Europe for 4 years before that, but beginning of my coaching career in the United States.
All right, so Judd Heathcote, I don't know how you coach or how you determine how you coach, but our thought of him was as a very good coach, but pretty intense and could go to the point of being crazy. What's it appropriate? Because again, he becomes famous winning the national title with Magic Johnson, and the rest is history.
Right. Judd was an underrated basketball coach. If you look at Judd's tree of players, he had quite a few guys who made it in the NBA, and so he was kind of a pro coach in that sense. He trained guys to really be able to adapt to the pro game. He had Michael Ray Richardson at Montana, obviously Magic Johnson and Scott Skiles and guys like that, because Judd believed in that pro game where there was a lot of, you know, one-on-one competition. There was a lot of pick and roll action in Judd's offense, and I think Judd was a little bit ahead of his time as far as college game goes, and saw a lot of his guys have success at the next level. And the other thing about Judd, and those of you probably don't know, the funniest coach of all time. He was a stand-up comic, basically. He could, you know, he when we would go to luncheons and tournaments and things like that. We went to a tournament one time at the University of Arizona with Mike Krzyzewski, Lute Olson, and the coach from the University of Florida. I can't think of his name right now. And Norm Sloan, exactly. And Krzyzewski said to the directors of the team, I'll come, I'll play, I'm going to go to dinner, I will speak at the dinner just like all the other coaches do, but I will not speak after Judd Heathcote. I must speak before him. I'm not going to be embarrassed by speaking after him, because the guy is, it was uncanny how funny he was. So anyway, that's another part.
Wow, that is good. All right, now I lost track of everything. You can tell me where, but the next thing I know, you're an interim coach with the Chicago Bulls after Michael Jordan had left, which had to be the worst job in the world. It's like following Mike Krzyzewski. So, I mean, I know you coached other places, but, Is that somewhat accurate? I can get to asking you. What do you? You're in the Hall of Fame of interim coaches. You did it. You've done it twice.
Well, yeah, I did it twice, and you know, it's not a. I wouldn't tell someone, hey, yeah, go try that out. Go try being an interim. It's not the greatest gig in the world, but it's an opportunity to see what you can do. And first time I did it was in Chicago, and we get off to a pretty good start. We were like, I don't know, 6-2, something like that after the first 8 games. And but then, you know, you've replaced a coach for a reason, because the team isn't very good or is not performing well. And, you know, so a lot of the bad habits rolled back in, and a lot of the problems of the team rolled back in. So being an interim is, it's not easy, but, you know, I did it with the Bucks, and with the Bucks we made the playoffs, which was the goal all along. And they didn't want to continue on with me. They wanted to go in a different direction, and so it is what it is. You know, being an interim is not something a coach should aspire to.
All right, I'll quote you on that. Well, no, and Jordan's been gone for a number, but am I correct in saying it just there's no way you're going to have a team like he did? Or do people, am I making too much of that, or do you just live with that legacy and know that you're never going to do anything as great as what they did, but you still do the best you can? Or is that not even a factor?
Well, you know, I'll give you another example of that. John Wooden. You know, when John Wooden was at UCLA, people don't realize he went almost 20 years but not really having great teams. But it was back in an era where they didn't fire the coach if the team wasn't that great. You know, they just kind of, you know, you did your job and you graduated your players and you reduced it. You know, you kind of kept your job. Now, you know, it's more of a pressure cooker now. But then eventually he comes and he does what John Wooden does, which is, you know, win 11 NCAA championships in, 13 years or whatever it was. And then he retires, and it's very difficult to replace those people. And it's just the same. It's the same thing with, you know, a guy like Michael Jordan, who, you know, I think is, you know, the best player who's ever played the game, as far as the guys that I have seen. And I've coached LeBron, and LeBron's an extremely close second in my book. And then you got guys like Kobe that you can look at from a distance, as I did. And it's, you know, it's tough. You can't replace those guys. They're legends. They're, you know, their imprint is so deep into the team. And the accomplishments that Michael had in Chicago, even though it was years that I think he left in 99 or something like that, and I came in there around 2005, there was still the hangover from Michael, and it stayed there for a long time. And you know, until Derrick Rose kind of hit his prime there for a couple of years, you know, it was very much they were still living in the Jordan era.
I guess as far as the interim, I should mention Scott Skiles. I don't know if the second time he said, here we go again, because you're an interim after him at both instances, right, in Chicago mm-hmm. and Milwaukee?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Scott was a great, great coach. He was like Scott was really, really good. And we got a lot out of those teams in Chicago. We had a young team. Man, we got a lot. That was an amazing run we had in Chicago. But sometimes, you know, the time runs out. You know, it's a long season. It's very difficult. You got young guys. You know, there's a lot of distractions with the young guys. We just, you know, Scott just kind of, you know, ran out his time, which was about 5 years or so. And same thing happened in Milwaukee. You know, he's there, and you know, we had some success, and not great success, but we, you know, playoff team, and you know, guys were getting better. But sometimes the clock just runs out, and you know, guys, you know, they don't quite listen as much, and you know, things kind of turned a little bit sour, and I've seen it happen many, many times, not only teams I'm with, but also teams that I observe from the outside. So, you know, that's what happened. Scott was an amazing coach. I mean, he was an amazing coach. And
what
yeah,
makes
so
you say that? That amazing is a very strong word.
Yeah, he's he in the heat of the moment when the game is on the line. I've been around. I've been an assistant coach for a long time, so I've seen a lot of head coaches at work. And in the heat of the moment, when the game is on the line, what can you do to help your team win? And he could do it. He could calm the timeout. He could gather the players around. He could tell them what to do. He could give them a set to run. He could get the right guy the ball at the in the right place at the right time. And I watched him do it over and over and over again. And there's not a lot of guys that can do that.
All right, talking with Jim Boylan now. Did he couldn't have been as good a coach as he was a high school basketball player. Did he tell you that he's the original Jimmy Chitwood from Hoosiers?
He is. I know that whole story. Yeah.
Well, no, yeah, but like he was at Plymouth. He had four homers and him, and they won the state championship. I think they beat mm-hmm. Sean Kemp's team in the process.
Yeah.
And Mike Dean, who went on to be the head coach at Marquette, was then an assistant at Michigan State. And he went and he says, "This I've never seen anything like it." I mean, he's incapable of explaining just how incredible Scott Skiles was in that tournament.
You know, when I was with Scott for, geez, I think, 10, 12 years. Know him very well. He talked a little bit about that, but over the course of those 10, 12 years, I would get a lot of info from bits and pieces from him, and then bits and pieces from other people. I do believe at the end of the movie Hoosiers, when the credits are rolling, behind the credits, they're showing a high school basketball game, and I do believe that is the game that Scott played in for the state championship.
Wow.
Might be true. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'm about 90% sure on that.
Well, most people don't even know.
He is the original.
Yes.
Jimmy Chitwood.
Just incredible. All right, so we have – now, what was the connection there from Michigan State, or did he know you, or you? He said he had left as a player. How did the two of you get hooked up?
Well, so he graduated in May. I came in June, and we kind of knew each other a little bit because of the program. And then I was in Vancouver as an assistant, and I called. Scott was in Phoenix and just gotten the job. He took Danny Ainge's place. I think Danny stepped down a month or two into the season, and my season was kind of winding down in Vancouver, so now we're talking about March or so, and Phoenix is going to be a playoff team, and I just sent out a call to Scott, got his numbers, called him and said, "Hey, man, I'm not sure what you're going to be doing next year, but if you're interested, I'm interested," and he got right back to me. He said, let's talk later on, and Judd Heathcote, you know, picked up the phone and said, "Hey, why don't you, talk to Jim and Tom Izzo?" So that's just basically how, it's just, one of those things. Definitely a Michigan State connection. And then we met each other and we just, we just hit it off. We got along really, really well. And our wives got along really well. And so it was just a great match.
The rest is history. Now we take a break, and then part three, Jim Boylan, from being NCAA champion and now interim coach to Jim Boylan with LeBron James and Giannis next. 94.5 ESPN, Homer with Jim Boylan. I said he's the Forrest Gump of basketball. We've covered all some of the stuff with Scott Skiles, and now we get to LeBron James or Giannis, I guess, after Milwaukee, then you go to Cleveland, and LeBron is back in Cleveland. I'm not sure I have all the years right. I know I'm pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, you're right. I left Milwaukee, and Mike Brown hired me in Cleveland. And we're there, and we finished the first season. We've got Kyrie Irving, Tristan Thompson. We're not very good. At the end of the season, Mike gets let go. David Griffin is the general manager, and David Griffin and I worked together in Phoenix. So David was like, just hang, Jim. I don't know what we're going to do right now. So they end up hiring David Blatt. And we're in summer league, and we're getting ready for a game in Vegas for summer league. And suddenly there's a buzz going on we're having a morning shoot around, and suddenly the media is showing up, and there's a big buzz going on. And suddenly they say, LeBron just said he's coming back to Cleveland. And everybody's like, oh, okay. So that changes everything. And so obviously LeBron comes back to Cleveland. David Blatt is the coach. David wants me to stay on. Again, because David and I have a mutual friend, and I helped David feel comfortable a little bit, or, when he first was going after the job in the NBA, then he got the job in the NBA, he didn't really know anyone, he didn't have anyone, and, so just my presence just happened to work out for him at the time, and, so LeBron comes back, and off we go to four consecutive NBA finals, and David didn't make it all the way through, but that's the way life is in the NBA.
All right, now I could get fired because people's like, you've talked to Jim Boylan this long and you haven't asked him about LeBron James. I don't know what you knew of him, and then he's there, so anything you say about LeBron James, people are going to love it, so what do you want? What's the first thing you would say if someone said, "So you were with LeBron"? What's at the top?
The guy is always on. I'll just say, I'll use that word on. I'll give you an example. When he first came to Cleveland, and I was just I was an assistant, and so I see him in the in the weight room. And this is the first time that I actually, get to see him. And I walked up to him and I said, hey, LeBron, my name's Jim Boyle. And I barely got my last name out. He goes, Coach, you don't have to introduce yourself to me. He goes, I know who you are. He goes, we played against you guys last year in the playoffs. You guys gave us all we can handle, did a hell of a job. I really appreciate that. And, but that's just the way, that's just one thing about him. He remembers everything. He remembers every play. He remembers every situation. He can repeat those things. He can analyze those things. He's the hardest worker on your team. He's the most dedicated, and he puts in so much time into his craft, not only physically, but mentally and emotionally. And, I've had the opportunity to watch Michael Jordan up close. I never coached Michael, but I did have the opportunity to coach LeBron. And, you want to talk about a role model. He's not perfect. There's no one who's perfect. But that guy's been in the spotlight since he's 14 years old. And the things that he's accomplished and the things that he has done are just above and beyond what any of us could expect someone like that in his situation to be able to handle the pressure on a daily basis and to live like that. The guy just amazed me, and he's funny, and he's thoughtful, and I just can't say enough good things about the guy because he is one of my favorite people.
Wow. aside from his incredible ability, his approach to the game that you talked about, is there anybody else that he reminded you of, college or pro? And again, I'm not asking that they be really good, mm-hmm. but just all those other things that stood out to you.
I think he's unique. I really do. I think there's people who have levels of his, you know, and again, I don't know Kobe, but I see, you know, from a distance, I see from a distance, you know, the things that Kobe has done. I've heard about the things that he has done. I see the influence that he has had on lots of people. So I would imagine that being around someone like him, like Kobe, would be similar to being around someone like LeBron. And so I would guess that that would probably be the closest comparison. And to see what he's doing right now, I mean, the guy's, you know, 38 years old and, you know, scoring 40 points and back-to-back.
But it doesn't surprise you at all, I'm sure. I bet you're not even the slightest bit surprised.
Not at all. Not at all, because the guy's like a, you know, he's like a, almost like a superhero freak kind of thing. You know, like he twists his ankle and you're like, if I know 20 other guys who twisted their ankle just like he did, be out 3 weeks. He's back in 2 days. You know, and then, you know, just do that over and over and over again. And, you know, just absolutely amazing and such a, for me personally, such a blessing to be around someone like that.
Talking with Jim Boylan, he came out in the draft the same year as Dwayne Wade, and I was telling everybody how good Dwayne Wade was. And I talked mm-hmm. to somebody in the league, and I said, LeBron can't be this good. I said, I don't care how good he is. I've never followed and heard people talk about it. He turned to me and said, Homer, he's Mozart.
Yeah.
And I think that was, I'm no musical expert, but you're kind of saying the same thing. It wasn't, no. This isn't about how high he jumps, what he does. This is about all that other stuff, and mm-hmm. like a savant at that yeah. young age. And it sounds like you're saying pretty much the same.
I'll tell you another little side story was I was in Phoenix, and you remember Gary Brokaw?
Sure.
For the Bucks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Back in the day.
Couldn't get into Marquette, so he went to Notre Dame.
Great guy. He was a scout for the Suns and Jerry Colangelo and when LeBron was, I think, 14 years old and Gary went to see him play. He came back, he said, if that guy put on an NBA uniform tomorrow, he said he'd average 18 points a game in this league. He was 14 years old. That's what he said. He said tomorrow he would average 18. He'd average 18 points a game. And I was like, really? I was like, wow, okay. Keep my eye on this guy.
All right, you're with him in Cleveland. And again, it's, I think, the greatest thing he's accomplished. I think that to go back home and win a title, I don't care how many mm-hmm. other rings you have. He'll never have a ring as big as that one. And then yeah. you're down 3-1. You're playing a team that won 73 games. But I know that everybody there, and you had to be included, like, I don't care. When you got LeBron, we got a chance. There's nothing right. that could occur that would surprise me, even given the situation. Is mm-hmm. that pretty close to accurate?
That's absolutely accurate, man. We got, you know, we're down 3-1, you know, we find a way to win game 5, and then we go home and we win game 6, and we're all like, okay, we're going back to Golden State, and they've won 73 games.
Yep.
They got this guy and that guy and this guy, and, you know, they're on fire and this and that, but we have the best player in the world on our team. And so it's one game. Okay. I'll take that. And that guy made the greatest basketball play I have ever seen in my life. When he blocked the layup, I had a perfect view of that sitting on the bench. And that play developed, and J.R. Smith, I think it was who was making the layup. I can't think of his name right
Now.
Yeah,
see Andre.
Andre Iguodala. Correct. Andre Iguodala. And J.R. Smith made him just have to change direction just slightly, which gave LeBron the opportunity to get there on time. And then I'll tell you one other thing. A lot of people always badmouth the referees. The referee on that call was a guy named Mike Callahan. And Mike Callahan was sprinting down the sideline to keep up with that play. And he did the right thing. When you're an official and you're in a situation like that and you're on the move, the best thing to do is to stop. And that's what Mike Callahan did. He sprinted down the sideline. He got to about the three-point line, and he came to a complete stop and just watched the play. And LeBron pinned that ball against the backboard. And, you know, because some referees might have called goaltending, and it was not a goaltend. And Mike Callahan did the right thing and let that play go. And then Kyrie hits the three, and Kevin Love gets the stop against Steph Curry. There you go. So, yeah, it was unbelievable. What a moment.
And I only have one question, and that is, so when it happens, do you say, nothing he ever did surprised me? Or did you think, even for LeBron, I'm still amazed what he did. Which was it?
I said, even the latter, even LeBron, I'm still amazed. It was the greatest basketball play I had ever seen in my life. And the greatest part about it was that it wasn't an offensive play. That it wasn't some spectacular dunk or a putback or a, you know, step back three or, you know, a half court shot or anything like that. It's a defensive play. It's the greatest play I've ever seen.
All right. It would be also just mean to not ask your thoughts on Marquette and the season they're having this year. I don't know how much time you have. You're kind of retired, but I don't think you'll ever be retired. I don't know what you're doing, but there's no way you're just passing time.
I am a huge fan. I think Shaka is doing an amazing job. I love the team. I watch as many games as I can and I just love the fight, man. I just love the fight in the team. I love the size. I love the athleticism. I love the agility. I love the ability to switch on to different guys. And when there's a mismatch in the post, they react. They come and trap. They rotate. They move. It's beautiful. It's beautiful to watch them play. And I think that, anything can happen, man. And they're a quality team. And the best part of it is they've gotten better. I mean, from the beginning of the season, they've made progress. You watch them play. They're more confident. Their guys are stepping up. It's not the same guy every night. Although you have certain guys who are giving you, you know, consistency in play, but you also have other guys coming to the forefront and showing what they can do, man. I'm excited for them, and I'm excited for the program, excited for the school, the students. It's just a beautiful thing to watch.
And I'm right. You're not retired. Like you're doing something. What are you doing? You're filling time.
I take care of my grandkids. I do. I'm an old man now.
Well, no, there's nothing to be an old man. That's what people do now. That's the best thing you can do for your children is to help with their kids, right? I mean, that's the reality of the world we live in.
Yeah.
Nobody's complaining, but yeah, it's you're coaching again.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
exactly right.
It's
exactly
a treat. Right. I always wanted to find out the reality of Assumption College in Worcester, Mass, because no one's ever pronounced that right that didn't live there, correct?
Yeah, Worcester.
You
got to get the New England accent.
Yeah, I haven't done that. I just thought it was the weirdest pronunciation for a town ever. We will talk again, and you got some lucky grandkids, and thanks for the time, and Yes, you are the Forrest Gump. I didn't even bring up other players. I know I could bring up others, and you'd have comments about them as well. I didn't know. Well, wait. So what was Giannis's connection? You left and he was drafted, or was there any?
Yeah, I was already gone when John Hammond selected Giannis. I was already gone. I think maybe that was the year I left. I'm
I think
not quite
it was.
Sure.
I think it was, yeah.
Exactly. Obviously a good pick. He's turned out to be a pretty good player, to say the least. And I wish I could have been around to enjoy working with him. I just love who he is, man. I just love who he is. I just love the guy. I love the things he says. I remember something about in his first year, he was running. Someone picked him up on the street because he was running because he was late for the game. I just love the guy, man. I just love the he's got this humbleness about him, and this way of just handling himself that is just a breath of fresh air, and it's just wonderful to see. And man, is Milwaukee lucky to have that guy. And And that guy's lucky to have Milwaukee. So it's a great marriage.
All right, till the next time we talk, I'll find something other new about you. All right, thanks, Jim.
All right, brother.
Jim
right,
Boylan, 94.5 ESPN. Something's next, not as good.
I don't have to do nothing but stay black and die. White people!
I will bet anybody.
I can't do it. We'll do it live! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! Thing sucks!